our next speaker. I met William roughly in 2007 when I first discovered the same project. So fortunate to be close by, so I've got here watching me. William does a lot of things openly, including his entire biography back to when he was born. So I'll let you read that online. And that will take you up just after getting his PhD from Berkeley in about 2001. He spent 5 years at Harvard and then a year or two at UC San Diego before coming up to the University of Washington. You should know he's a first-class research mathematician. Unfortunately, he does number theory rather than common parts. One or two published books, three or four in the works, hard to say just how many books he has, 44 papers or so. In the SAGE project, he's got a lot of different talents. You may have gone to the sagemath.org site where he runs several servers and provides free use of SAGE to the world. He keeps that up and running. He's a web developer, so the SAGE notebook, along with Tom Booksby in the back row and a few other people, created the application that you use if you use the SAGE notebook either locally or on the UW server. He writes high-level algorithms in number theory, linear algebra, other areas. He writes some real low-level stuff for doing big integers and things of that sort. But what most impresses me about William is his leadership of the project. If you've been a department chair or been on a big committee and trying to organize 10, 20, 30, 40 mathematicians, you know how hard that can be. William keeps 200 mathematicians around the world working hard, doing great things, and does it with a real soft touch. Nice to see the way he does that. Man of many talents. I was discussing one day at dinner with my teenage sons some of the things I've been doing on the project, and I think they had this mental image of William. Certainly thought William would be older than me, I think. And we talked some, and somehow I let it slip that one of the SAGE days he snuck out to go and do a skateboard. The next day at dinner, "Dad, we got on YouTube. We saw those skateboarding videos with that guy Stein. He's no good." With that, I'll give you William.
Okay, thanks. Okay, thanks for the introduction. So this will be kind of an introductory overview talk about SAGE. And I'll explain some of the background for the project, where it comes from, and then show you various demonstrations of using SAGE to kind of give you a sense of where it's going and what it is. First, let me make sure this works at all. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Yep. Okay, first, I'm just curious, which do people tend to use more of these two information resources, Wikipedia or Encyclopedia Britannica? In fact, who's used Encyclopedia Britannica in the last week? Who's used Wikipedia in the last week? Okay, so you can tell there's some difference between these two. Which are you more likely to contribute to? Has anyone here ever contributed to Encyclopedia Britannica their whole life? Wow! Has anyone here ever contributed to Wikipedia? Okay, so that's pretty impressive. Wikipedia is a lot bigger than Britannica. Wikipedia has over 1 billion words in it. So if you measure size by words, then it's 25 times bigger than Encyclopedia Britannica. There's all kinds of articles about your favorite TV shows and stuff. And of course, Britannica doesn't. By the way, so this is the combinatorial potlatch, and I looked up on the potlatchfund.org website, which is a local Native American organization, the definition of potlatch that they give, and they say it's a Chinook word for the native spirit of gift giving. And it kind of fits well with SAGE, since SAGE is free and open source, and I know a lot of the people actually involved with this potlatch, and some of it is motivational for SAGE being free and open source. Here's some nice pictures, by the way, from their website. So if you want to find out about the other potlatch, go to this website. They're having a huge gala tonight, actually. So right here. And it's only a mile away. But there's a huge admission ticket because it's a fundraiser. OK, so let me tell you about SAGE. So here's the mission statement of the project, which has repeatedly helped clarify where Sage is going and what it should be and what it shouldn't be since for at least the last five or six years. And it's the following: create a viable, free, open source alternative to Magma, Maple, Mathematica, and MATLAB. So that's the goal of the project. And this is a helpful goal because it's kind of viable alternatives really relative to each individual. For me, a viable alternative to those systems is mainly a viable alternative to Magma, because that of those four pieces of software, Magma is the one that provides the most relevant functionality for number theory, at least. So viable is something that gets interpreted by each person. Free and open source is, you know, pretty standard definition nowadays. And it also helps decide what sort of functionality one should have. So for example, there was a discussion on the Sage mailing list a few days ago about whether Sage should be able to easily import JPEG files and then start manipulating them. Well, MATLAB does, and Mathematica does, and therefore Sage should. End of discussion. So it's easy to know what the answer to questions like that are. Should we implement an algorithm for, you know, if you come up with some weird thing that isn't in any of the MAs, maybe the answer is no. But if it is clearly one of, you know, a feature of one of those systems, then you already have an argument that it should go into Sage. But over an overview of what that means, so a viable alternative to these MAs, as I'll call them, are mathematical features. So what one wants, and certainly doesn't have today with Sage, is that you have the same capabilities. If there's a function to compute the reduced row echelon form of a matrix using a certain algorithm, then Sage should have that same function. If you can compute the number of partitions of n in Mathematica quickly, so for example, Mathematica has a function that very, very efficiently computes the number of partitions of an integer, then Sage should have a similar function that also has similar complexity or better. Those are the sorts of, it wouldn't be enough for Sage to have a function to compute that if it were thousands of times slower than what's available in one of the other systems. So that's what we're aiming at, and certainly we don't have that. It's a difficult target, it's kind of a moving target. There are over 1,500 people, maybe actually over 2,000 people that work for these companies if you combine them. Obviously not all of them are doing programming, just like not all Sage developers are doing programming. But every year, 2,000 people are working full-time to, in some way or another, advertise or improve those systems. So we have to kind of try to keep up with that and even catch up with what it was a couple of years ago. So it's a pretty tricky problem. But you can prioritize. Graphics, we want to have 2D and 3D graphics, of course. We want to have a notebook interface and other nice graphical interfaces. We want to have lots of documentation, books about books that use Sage as examples, books about Sage, papers, curriculum, etc. One key thing, though, which is, I think, important to emphasize and could be confusing to people, is Sage is not at all supposed to be a drop-in replacement for those systems. So if you have an existing Magma program or Mathematica program or MATLAB program, you shouldn't expect to be able to literally just load that into Sage. Unfortunately, we're not aiming at being a viable alternative in that sense. There have been some people who have been interested in writing parsers like that, but it hasn't gone anywhere at all ever, so I doubt it will happen after 6.5 years. There is an example of a system like that called Octave, which is a free open source program that has a pretty similar feature set and language to MATLAB. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar. And Sage is not like Octave at all. So our goal is not to make something that's kind of very similar to one or all of these MAs. That would be kind of hard to do because each of those systems have different programming languages. So what would we do? Be like some weird hybrid of all of them? It would be very confusing, especially because not only do they have, their languages are different, they're completely different paradigms of programming. Some are functional, some are object-oriented, et cetera. Some are procedural. Also, the culture is much different. The architecture, the way Sage is built, the programming language itself, everything feels a lot different than the MAs. So the key way in which Sage is a viable alternative is really mainly in mathematical features. Here's some motivation. So some of the reasons why, when I was starting the Sage project in early 2005, I was motivated to go with Sage instead of trying to continue to improve some of the other systems. I had contributed a lot to Magma to get it up to speed for the sorts of things I needed, but I started having issues. So some issues are that the other systems are all commercial, and that can be, for me, it wasn't a problem that Magma was commercial because since I had contributed to the program, they gave me free copies. And they would even give copies to my friends if I asked really nicely. But unfortunately, there were other people who wanted to use the software I had written in Magma, and they weren't my friends or my close friends. Maybe they were friends. If Facebook had existed, then they probably would be my Facebook friends, but that didn't seem to count. So it was expensive, and I heard stories about students who wanted to use Sage and they couldn't, you know, get a copy, or sorry, not Sage, they wanted to use Magma and they couldn't get a copy. Even if they had money, it was hard to buy because you couldn't just, you had to contact somebody over email and then set up an FTP download. And this just got to be annoying. It was especially bad for postdocs because they would have to pay, you know, $1,000 for a copy of Magma. And I just got frustrated with that and kind of saw that in the long run it wasn't going to be so good for me. Closed source, this is annoying with any of these systems. Sometimes you want to see how an algorithm is implemented because you'll find, for example, with Magma, there are certain functions in there that are blazingly fast compared to anything else in the world, and you wonder why. Moreover, you think if you understood why, maybe you could, you know, do something else research-wise that would be pretty exciting. And if you look at their documentation, they'll say, we implement algorithm X. And you look at that paper, and there's algorithm X. But if you try to implement it, you'll find that, you know, it's not very fast. And there may be one little clever trick, like one little algebraic identity or something that you use at a key place, which dramatically speeds up the runtime of some algorithm. And that's kind of kept secret in the system because it gives them a competitive advantage in the market. And this happens with pretty much every interesting algorithm you ever implement almost. So that's annoying. Three is kind of the same thing, but with three, the issue is you come up with a really cool idea for some way to make the system a lot better. You tell the, you know, you tell Stephen Wolfram and he ignores your email, or you tell John Cannon and he says no. And that's it. Whereas if you have an open system, you can make a big argument on a public mailing list, and if a lot of people like your idea, it's probably going to get in, even if the top person doesn't like it. This has happened with Sage several times, where somebody's proposed something, and I don't like it at all, but a lot of other people like it, and so it definitely goes in. This has happened many, many times. And in the long run, I was wrong. That's okay. Copy protection's a pain, because some of the, like Mathematica, for example, often the license just expires. So for example, I was going to use Mathematica in my demo, and I started it up and it said, sorry, your 1 year subscription has expired. Please get another license. So that's kind of annoying. The analog for Sage is that sometimes Sage is hard to install, but at least you don't have to deal with copy protection. Another issue with all of the MAs is that because they're all pretty much started in the 90s, somehow the trend then was to design your own programming language. So each one of these systems has its own custom programming language, which they consider a big selling point, but I don't think it is. With Sage, we just use a mainstream programming language, namely Python, which is a pretty popular language, and it works pretty well. These have their special languages, which, though they are in some ways very good for mathematics, and often there are certain parts of math where you can express it well in that language, if you do something that veers away from mathematics, they can get very frustrating. So it's nice to use a general purpose language that was designed for not only mathematics, but really any application. Bug tracking, so it's secret for most of those systems. I think MATLAB has some sort of bug tracker that you can sign up for and actually see what the bugs are. But if you want to know what all the known bugs are in Mathematica, you're out of luck, or Magma or Maple. And compilers, so in many, many situations, these languages don't have compilers, which allow you to produce faster code. So there's a whole bunch of technical and social and other issues that one has with closed software. Of course, they all have, you know, if there's function foo that you really, really want to evaluate, and it's only in Mathematica, you're going to use Mathematica to evaluate foo. And that's the big plus of these systems, is that lots of people have put in a huge amount of effort over many, 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 many years in implementing lots of interesting functions. Oh, here's the output of my screen this morning. Sorry, but I can still demo Mathematica using a remote server that I have set up. I'm curious how many people have ever seen this, where they wanted to start Mathematica and then boom, sorry. So a couple of people. All right, so here's what Sage is. And basically, the rest of my talk is just about trying to answer the question, what is Sage? I'm going to kind of tell you what some of the components are, how it's built, and then show you examples of using Sage. By the way, this talk is given inside of Sage, which is inside of, it's running inside of a web browser, which is running locally on my laptop. It's connected to localhost, so I started some program which starts a web server. On a Mac, you can click on some icon and it pops up your web browser and starts a web server transparently. And this is a web page, but there are these little cells where you can type in input code. and then you hit shift enter to evaluate it. Switching back to full screen. So here's what Sage is. The programming language that Sage uses is Python. So when you type in code in these blocks to evaluate, you're not typing in Mathematica code or Maple code, you're typing in Python code. So if you just take pretty much any random snippet of Python code from a book or somewhere else and put it in one of these cells, it'll work and you'll get output. So that's how you, if you want to learn the language that Sage uses, you don't search for Sage programming language or, you know, how do I make a for loop in Sage, in the Sage language, that doesn't make sense. You just say, how do I make a for loop in Python? And Python being certainly one of the top five most popular scripting languages, you'll find lots of answers to that question. The top scripting languages are, you know, JavaScript, Perl, Python, can't think of any others. There aren't that many, but those are definitely the super popular ones. And then there's a bunch that are a little bit less popular. So it's Python in that it's a program where you type in Python, but there are lots of extra functions, about 25,000 actually, extra functions for mathematics that don't come with Python, and they're included in Sage. In addition, the way these functions are implemented, some of them, somebody just sat down and wrote them in Python. Some of them, somebody sat down and wrote them in C or C++ or some other language. And in some cases, what happened was that we wanted a function to, computing with symmetric functions. And instead of writing a whole bunch of code from scratch to work with symmetric functions, we took a library called Symmetrica, which is, I think, a C or C++ library, and they made it so you could use the library easily from within Sage, from Python, and distribute Symmetrica with Sage. There are about 100 different packages, kind of like Symmetrica, that together all come with Sage. And they're developed by all kinds of people all over the world. So that's what this interfaces thing. So you can, when you use Symmetrica from Sage, you don't know that Symmetrica necessarily is being used. There's nothing explicit. You just make a symmetric functions algebra and start computing with it. But under the hood, it's using Symmetrica. So it's very, very fast. In fact, Dan Bump, who some of you may have heard of because he sort of does combinatorial stuff, he's a professor at Stanford. Does anybody know Dan Bump? Dang. He wrote a big book on representation theory. I don't know. He's the lead maintainer of GNU Go, the Go program for the free open source Go program. That's probably his most famous thing. But I wanted him to get interested in Sage, and he was a big Mathematica user. And the way I got him into Sage was he was computing with symmetric functions in Mathematica, and we just tried some demos where he took what he was doing and then tried it in Sage, and it was 1,000 times faster because Symmetrica is this very tightly coded C library. It was just a lot faster than interpreted Mathematica. And that kind of drew him in. And he ended up writing an enormous amount of stuff relating to representations of Lie algebras and Lie groups and so on, which is part of this new library. So there's a lot of new code in Sage that people have written. Usually when people get involved with Sage development, they either do a lot of kind of basic Unix stuff involving getting Sage to build on lots of different computers, you know, getting the build process to be better, getting the testing process to be better. They're kind of like systems administration type people who are very good at that. Then there's another group of people, sometimes they overlap, who like to implement new algorithms or make the existing algorithms better. And that's where this new library has come from. Or make it so that you can use one of these 100 packages more smoothly. And there's an enormous amount of work for people to do for the new library. All you have to do is take any function that's in any of the other MAs that's not in Sage, and I guarantee you there are lots and lots of such functions. Maybe not so many in combinatorics from what I hear, but in other areas of math there are many, like in dynamical systems or algebraic topology. And you can implement it and add it to the library. By the way, to give you a sense of so I mentioned Symmetrica, but there are many other pieces of software included in Sage. These are some of the big ones organized. So Sage is very different than many of the open source math software systems out there you might have heard of because it includes most of them. So instead of when I started Sage, initially for the first 2 hours, actually, I was going to compete with Perry. I took the Perry file that implemented elliptic curves, which you know are important in number theory, and I sat down and started re-implementing stuff in there in Python in 2000, I think it was late 2004, and that was what Sage was going to be. It was going to be open source, and I thought it would be easy to at least get all the capabilities of these other open systems, because I could just copy their source code, right? That's the goal, and shouldn't be that hard. So I just started doing that, and literally after about 2 hours, I got really, I started realizing how boring this was going to be, and slow, and plus, as Perry improved, Sage wouldn't benefit at all from that. And I just realized it was an utterly, it was weird because I had planned to do this for months and got the tools together and figured out what the right language was. And finally, when I sat down to actually do it, within 2 hours, I realized this was a very bad idea. But interestingly, there's a system called NZMath, which is developed in Japan. And it's a Python-based system. They started at the same time as me. And they actually followed that sort of process to try to make a big system for number theory, where they just implemented tons of stuff from scratch in Python, mainly master's projects by Japanese grad students. And you can look at their website, but it's, they have lots of code that implements all these algorithms, but it's very, very slow and not very robust. So it hasn't got very popular. So that approach, ironically, was followed somewhere else at the same time. Okay, so here are the components that are in Sage, which I hope some of you have heard of. So GAP, for groups, algorithms, and programming, that is included in Sage. All functionality of GAP you can use from Sage, and any copy of Sage has GAP in it. Same statements for Maxima, which is a symbolic calculus program. Having Maxima in Sage, especially at the beginning, was super useful because it meant that you could use Sage for teaching calculus. So when I taught calculus, for example, at UCSD, I used Maxima because Sage didn't have any capabilities really in symbolic calculus. But nowadays, Sage is a good system for teaching calculus if you also want to use it for that. Singular is part of Sage for commutative algebra, algebraic geometry type stuff. R, which is an enormously popular system for statistics, every copy of Sage has R integrated into it, along with multiple ways of using R from Sage. So you can take a big array of numbers that you get from some calculation in Sage and very efficiently move it into R and then call various R functions on that array of numbers. There's also a lot of Python libraries out there. Since Sage is, in a sense, a Python library, it can include lots of other Python libraries, and these are all included with Sage. There's a lot of stuff that, so the world of Python users have tried to build an alternative to MATLAB by re-implementing a lot of the capabilities of MATLAB in Python, and we include quite a bit of their work. So these libraries like SciPy and NumPy and so on. And CVXOpt for things like optimization, basically lots and lots of MATLAB-like functionality, which is good because most Sage developers, though making a viable alternative to MATLAB is on the roadmap, most of us Sage developers are not applied math or numerical analyst type people. So it's good that we can benefit from the work of such people without having to do it ourselves. If Sage had its own custom language, then we would probably have to write that stuff from scratch, or at least we'd include libraries like GSL and then write wrapping around that. There's also lots of C and C++ libraries. So here's a list of some of them. Atlas for linear algebra and LAPACK. Jivaro for finite fields. GINAC for more powerful symbolic manipulation. IML for integer matrices, et cetera, et cetera. And Symmetrica, which should be on here. And then PerryGP is another system. So when you get Sage, you're getting a lot of these other systems. And in fact, some systems administrators, if they want to provide at least most of the open source software out there for their users, they'll install Sage, and then right after they install it, they run this one command, install scripts, and it will make it so that in your user local bin directory, you have the command gap, maxima, et cetera. So when you type that command, it runs the copy of that program that's included in Sage. And then as you upgrade Sage, all of those systems get upgraded. So you can think of Sage as a distribution of open source math software. And making it easy, so when I started Sage, the reason I decided to include all of these, actually slowly but surely each one got included, starting with Perry, but the reason that I started including them was that the other developers, all two of them for the first year at least, I wanted them to actually work on Sage, and just the raw difficulty of taking each of these programs from the web individually and then trying to install them and then get it all worked together, I found to be extraordinarily difficult, and I figured I was pretty technically competent. So I figured it had to be automated or other people wouldn't do it. So right now you just type, for example, make, and then Sage takes its own known good copies of all these and builds everything from scratch. Or of course you can just download a pre-built binary. Here's a map that has Sage developers. So these are the people So instead of two, there are a lot more. It kind of started with the Sage Days that's on my t-shirt. So we had two or three Sage developers, and then I had the Sage Days at the beginning of 2006 at UC San Diego, and about 30 people showed up. And then we had a couple of more Sage developers, and it's grown ever since through many Sage workshops and other events. So you can see that there are dots all over the world, most major places, 164 different places. These are people that have agreed to let us list them. There are some other people that have contributed anonymously and so on for various reasons. And oh, one thing, so I would like this to be much bigger. There's a certain barrier to entry in contributing to Sage that's higher than the entry barrier for Wikipedia. If you want to contribute to Wikipedia, you create an account and then you edit a page. And it changes instantly. And then somebody looks at it and maybe reverts your change. But there's a very low barrier of entry. It all happens through your web browser. And with Sage currently, that's not possible. You can't just be using Sage through your web browser like I'm doing here, or through the public. There's a public notebook server I maintain right now at University of Washington. You can try it out right now. If you just type Sage NB for Sage Notebook, I'll write this right here, into your cell phone or whatever, and then log in. And it only takes a second to make an account, or you can use any standard OpenID provider. Maybe I should write that function. Then you can just start using Sage. But you can't modify Sage and contribute patches and add a new function to Sage yet in that way. But it would be very nice if this were possible, and that's definitely the trend with how people interact with software. It would be great if, right on your cell phone or something else, you could edit the Sage library in some way, add a new function, and then contribute that right through a web browser. And for example, Tom Boothby, who's in the back in the middle, has proposed several times ways to try to implement something like this, but he's always got distracted by working on his thesis. But we'll see what happens in the future. I definitely still have that on the roadmap in my mind, that you'll be able to just edit something right, so you'll have a function like, Bernoulli number or something. You'll look at it, you'll do double question mark to see the source code, say, and then you'll go, hey, wait a minute, I need to add some, this documentation would be better if I added something here, and this function would be better if I added, some code right here to do something. And you could double click right there, do it, make the edits, see the change, and then contribute that. And then at least the barrier of entry would be that you know Python, and other than that, it would be similar to the barrier of entry to developing for Wikipedia, which would be great. Right now, if you want to develop for Sage, you have to download a copy of Sage and install it on your computer, and then learn something about how Sage is laid out, edit the code, learn how to see that your changes have been taken into account, and then you have to make a patch. You have to send the patch somewhere. You have to get an account somewhere to submit the patch. There's a lot of steps. Fortunately, if you go to the Sage website, which is sagemath.org, and then click on, I think, Info for Developers, there's something called the Developer's Guide. And this will walk you step by step through the process of contributing your own code to Sage. I think Rob Beezer right there in the back did a huge amount of work on making it so that you could easily walk through this development process and really cleaning this up. So there is a barrier to entry to contributing code to Sage, but at least it's a very well-documented one, and you can follow it. Okay, so moving on. Okay, I'm going to summarize some history, and then the rest is just going to be some examples of using Sage. So there's a lot of years. So starting in 2005, first version of Sage was released in February, and then we had Sage Days workshops, and Sage started becoming more general. Initially, Sage was just going to be aimed at number theory, but unfortunately, the very first person who started contributing code to Sage was a coding theorist, David Joyner. And so I very quickly realized that if Sage was going to grow with basically no funding at the time, at least, then I really had to make Sage more general. He taught a lot of undergrad calculus classes and had a personal interest in coding theory. So he really wanted symbolic calculus and coding theory support. And he just liked some of the tools I had put into Sage for number theory, but he wanted it to be much more general, just for his stuff. And so we just started making it more and more general. In 2007, we got a huge jump in users because we got a bunch of publicity as a result of winning first prize in something called the Trophies de Libre, some French open source software competition. And we started getting funding. And then we started having lots of these Sage Days workshops over the last couple of years. For example, last year we had 13 of them. These workshops last for about a week, and people just come together and write as much code as they can and sleep as little as possible. So we've produced a lot of code at these workshops. And this year we will have had 12 Sage Days workshops by the end of the year. And there are already 5 planned for next year. And apparently there's one planned in 2013. So there are many of these workshops. And as far as things that are going on, so up until 2008, I was making every release of Sage myself, which meant I spent an enormous amount of time getting code from people, putting it into Sage, trying to make a release, et cetera, et cetera. And at some point, I realized that I wasn't the only human being in the world capable of making a Sage release. I believed that for some bizarre reason for a couple of years. But in fact, there are lots of people that can make Sage releases and, in fact, make them much better than me. I would say this year, one of the main differences about Sage compared to previous years is that there aren't as many releases of Sage. There's maybe one release just over every month, but they're very stable, extremely well tested, and a lot of care has gone into making each release better and better. So instead of introducing bugs, the number of bugs go down, the number of good stuff that's in there, the amount of good stuff goes up, et cetera. So other people are making releases right now, mainly Jeroen Demeyer from Belgium, and he's doing a great job, and so on. One thing that I'm planning, so there's this webpage, sagemb.org, that I mentioned. If you click on it, here's what you see. So if you just go there, you can make an account by clicking sign up for a new account. Or if you happen to use Google or Yahoo or any of these other OpenID account providers, you can just click and it uses your existing account. It'll ask you what login name you want the very first time you do this, then ever after it just uses that. And then you can, you know, use Sage this way. So, you know, you have all these worksheets and so on, and you can create new worksheets and edit them and do computations. This server has something like 71,000 accounts on it. It's running at the University of Washington. And one thing I'm planning to do is create another server similar to this one that's hosted, say, on Amazon EC2 or something like that, and it'll have some sort of ads on it that will pay the, you know, $2,000 a year that it costs to host the server, which is nice because that could scale up more than, you know, a random computer I have sitting in the server room at UW's math department. And they have really good bandwidth, and it's all over the world. Like, you can move your virtual host to be in the East Coast or in Asia or something. Okay, so questions. Here's my testing 1, 2, 3 again. Okay, so I do have some examples prepared for various areas of mathematics, but I think I still have time left. And you can ask me some questions if you want to know about certain things or just general questions about Sage or whatever. But as Rob warned, unfortunately, I'm not a combinatorist. So if you ask me some technical question about combinatorics in Sage, I might not be able to answer that. Okay, so any questions?
Kind of a general question.
Sure.
So, you know, a lot of mathematicians, like a lot of us, know one of these other specialized programming languages, you know, let's go to Maple or whatever. And so besides the advantages that you showed there, is there some like kind of hidden killer app that you're thinking, like, this is going to make people block the Sage?
I think...
Because on some level, it's very convincing, and, you know, and I've tried it.
Depends on the person what is a killer app for that person. For some people, open source is a major, major killer app in and of itself. Especially people who live in third world countries or care about people who live in third world countries. Being free and open source gives them a better chance to contribute back and really understand what's going on instead of just using, say, pirated software. And so there's certainly, just being free for a lot of people is an actual real killer app. But it's not the only one. I mean, there are technical advantages to Python. If you look for a library in the Mathematica language for, I don't know, maybe maybe implementing various low-level web server stuff, you're probably not going to find it. If you look for something like that in Python, you will find it probably 10 times over. And for almost anything that's not mathematics, if you want a widget that does it in your programming language and you've chosen Mathematica as your programming language, the odds are less that you're going to find it than if you've chosen Python as your programming language. So I think that if nothing else, the killer app in Sage is that the language is Python. And Python itself has more users than any of the other MAs, far, far more users. The only MA that kind of really registers as having a lot of users compared to Python is MATLAB, because of industry use and so on. So I would say that the two main killer, maybe three, I'll add another one in a second, but one killer feature is the language being general purpose and extremely popular with people. Two, it being free and open source, which is very different than the other systems. A third one is the Sage Notebook. The closest analog of the Sage Notebook in the MA world is probably Wolfram Alpha, and you can't set up your own Wolfram Alpha server, so there's some differences. And it's less, you can't keep state from one calculation to the next with Wolfram Alpha. So that's another thing that is a bit different.
I guess I was asking if you think there's something that isn't there yet that will make the growth explode even much faster than...
I think it's all about access. Currently, I think that there would be probably, you know, easily a million users of Sage if it were really, really easy and fast and robust to use and people knew about it. So I have this free server I set up on one computer running out of the, you know, using the bandwidth of the math department. And that's probably the easiest, quickest way to get going with Sage. If instead there were 20 servers running on Amazon EC2 that all are very, very fast, and they have, you know, if suddenly the number of users doubled, I can change that to 40, and it doesn't cost me anything because I have some revenue coming in from it, then I think that would help a lot as far as expanding the number of users of Sage. So just regarding the number of users, I think it's just access. Because, for example, there's no really, really good way of running Sage under Windows. It has native versions for Linux and OS X. Under Windows, you have to install a virtual machine, which uses, you know, like 2 gigs of disk space, and it's kind of confusing. So, but what people use nowadays often is cell phones and iPads and web browsers, and they really like web apps if they work really well and are very fast and available. So, you know, like if I could happily run, you know, ads in major publications saying use sagenv.com and not have any fear that a million people are going to start hitting it at once, then I think the usage would go up dramatically. If it were as fast as Facebook and, you know, Gmail, as reliable with the same kind of uptime, then I think already that would make an absolutely tremendous difference. Yeah. It has nothing to do with math either. Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm going to ask this question correctly. Some of my co-authors, some of whom are here, have recently called me a Luddite. So, but I've seen you give a talk about this before where you showed us how you can export or you can create LaTeX code from your output.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I'm a huge fan of open source, so that's selling point enough. But this other feature, which I'm not sure the other MAs have, was huge to me. And so could you give a demonstration?
The creating LaTeX? Okay, so let's see. What's an object that you want to do that with? Well, first let's do a few simple things. So I'll make a matrix, a random matrix over the rationals. That's an example. It's not very random looking. Maybe I'll take its inverse. Okay, so do something like that. Whoops. Okay, so I'll take the inverse of some random matrix. There are some parameters you can pass to random that would make it. Oops. Just keep trying. Okay, there we are. So you can do LaTeX of B, and it gives you LaTeX that you can paste in. So this is handy. Or
this is the killer app I was asking.
Whoops. Oh, I have to say the variable I'm integrating with respect to. So there's another example. So you get an answer, and then you go, oh, I'd like that as LaTeX. So sure. That's nice. And you can also, yeah, you maybe want to see the LaTeX, so you do show of it, and it shows it to you. And if you click on that, you then get the LaTeX as well in a little box. So that's nice. And likewise with B, you can do show and look at it in LaTeX form. And this isn't an image. Each thing is an individual character. Right now it uses JS Math, and soon it will use MathJax, which is something that, for example, MathSciNet uses, and it's very popular. It's written by the same guy. The lead developer of that project, JS Math and MathJax, was at a recent Sage Days we had at University of Washington, David Cervoni. So yeah, you can do this, and almost any object in Sage has a LaTeX representation. So when you define a new Python class, you define a method underscore LaTeX underscore, and that's supposed to output the LaTeX representation of your object. And it'll kind of, it can recursively, you know, if you define a matrix, then you recursively call the LaTeX on the entries to get the LaTeX of the whole thing. So many, many, many different things in Sage have that. It's kind of a routine part of adding new objects to Sage that you implement a LaTeX representation for them. And you also mentioned images. So if you create a plot, so let's say we plot, I don't know, sine of x times cosine of x. It's a little smaller. From 0 to 4, you can just, if you just do g, you can see it in your web browser like that. I'm going to shrink it a little, not too much, though. But you can also save it, g.save as a dot, say, PDF. And you'll get a PDF version of that. And there it is. So it's just a PDF file. And you can, of course, zoom in on it because it's a PDF file. But PDF files are really good for including inside of LaTeX documents using include graphics. If you're using PDF LaTeX, which everybody, I think, uses these days, then you include them very easily. OK. So next question. Yes?
Well, I just wanted to say as an advertisement, I started using Sage about a year ago for a project. And it uses some GAP and then some NumPy and then at the end some CDXOpt and Singular. And
nice.
It would have been terrible to have to, you know, move the output of the GAP into the next thing and carry on. So it's nice to do it all in one place.
Yeah, we have a lot of interfaces.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let me just elaborate on that. So let's see, sage.interfaces.tab. So Sage has interfaces to all of these listed systems. So things like GAP, Fricus, List, Macaulay 2, Magma, Maple, Mathematica, MATLAB, Maxima. It has a pseudo-TTY-based interface to each of these systems, which can run either the system locally on your computer or on another computer over SSH. And what the interfaces are is basically all they do is simulate a command prompt, starts up the other program once in that command prompt, with the command prompt, and you can feed things and get output. And you can have, you know, five different copies of Mathematica started up all at once, and you're controlling all of them on different computers if you want, and then Singular somewhere else, and then call stuff in Sage as well. So just to show an example of that. Yeah. Okay, go on.
Well, I was just going to ask, don't laugh at me, but I'm normally a Windows user.
Mm-hmm.
Although I really respect Linux, and I had run SigWin for a long time, I just couldn't bring myself to do my day-to-day computing on Linux.
Uh-huh.
I just found that, and now I'm finding with Sage that the VMware player is really causing me problems. Is there any hope in the future for how it can run Sage on Windows? Or should I just become a Linux user, or should I try to use it in SigWin? What do you recommend?
Sage doesn't really work in SigWin
anymore.
It used to until 2007. The only hope, realistically, unless I have millions of dollars at my disposal for Sage under Windows, is SigWin, unfortunately. And even then, I don't think it's that great to run it under SigWin. Using it in a virtual machine, if you are willing to invest a little more time, may actually be enough for you because, you know, the virtual machines can be configured to use different amounts of memory. And, you know, the virtual machine that we provide on the website is probably 500 megs of RAM. And if you just change that parameter, you may get much better performance. You can also mount your Windows file system so that it's visible under the virtual machine. This makes it so that all of your files, I mean, that's probably the main reason why you run into trouble. That way you can directly read all the files that you have, that you've edited under Windows, and they're just there visible from your copy of Sage. Plus, when you use Sage, you're usually using the web browser interface, probably. And then you can use Internet Explorer or Firefox or whatever under Windows. You just connect to the virtual machine.
Okay.
So for the most part, it shouldn't make much of a difference. And it should be, I think that the time you'd invest in kind of learning a bit more about how you can use virtual machines would probably be worth it and completely resolve your issues. And you could still use Windows all you want.
Because
you have, you know, awesome editors and all kinds of cool stuff that you like using under Windows, which is fine. Just think of Sage as being the virtual machine and a program that runs inside of it. And you connect to it, and it can read all your files. So it's kind of a self-contained unit. And virtual machines are getting better these days. They keep getting better and better. It's really another one of the trends in computing. Yes?
So I apologize again if this is a bad question, but about
no
the virtual
questions.
Machine, which I struggled with.
Yeah.
You can read in, but what about exporting? I couldn't publish things for students to access over.
Yeah,
the,
so that would be a, that's a simple feature that needs to be implemented that hasn't been implemented. So here I am in this worksheet giving this talk. And I decide I like this worksheet a lot. I like to publish it. And what will happen if I try to publish it, imagine this running in the virtual machine. If I click on publish, it just publishes it so it's visible to everybody who can see the virtual machine, which is, of course, completely useless. You know, I click on publish, and that's it's just going to be visible to users on my laptop. So what I have to do right now is I have to click on file save right here, or sorry, file save worksheet to a file. That will download a file called something.sws to my local hard drive, which will be separate from the virtual machine. It'll just be on your Windows machine. And then you can upload that file to a public server such as sagenb.org. And that's what I did with this talk. If you go to sagenb.org/pub, you'll see a list of published worksheets. There's we haven't implemented a pager for this, so it's loading several thousand but to list. But here it is. I believe I uploaded Potlatch. Maybe I forgot to publish it. I was in a hurry. This was a few minutes ago. But these are worksheets that have been uploaded that anyone can see. So what you would do is you would log into sagenb.org and then publish your worksheet. That's what you can currently do, and that works fine. But obviously, it would be much better if right here there were an option, just something like a URL you could enter, which, for example, sagenb.org, and it would say, publish it to sagenb.org. And then what it would do is it would automatically send it there using some credentials that you have. That hasn't been implemented. The NSF has given us money to implement good stuff for the Sage Notebook very recently, and this is obviously a feature we should implement. So it's been often requested. So I expect to see it in the not-too-distant future, because we've been doing a lot of work on the notebook. So yeah, it's a great question. So then you'd have your virtual machine. If you want to share a worksheet, you just say publish, and then you choose where to publish it to. Okay, but that doesn't exist yet. Let me get back to the talk. Okay, any other, Here we are, okay, other questions?
I don't understand, what is Sage Notebook? Is that what I'm looking at?
Yes. So
it looks like a web page or something.
Yeah, it looks like a web page. So that's a funny thing about Sage. So so Sage is kind of has two different, at least two different interfaces. One way in which you could use Sage is if you're kind of a command line user. You type Sage at the command prompt, something starts up. Of course, I have some alpha pre-release version because I'm that kind of guy. but it'll start up, load a bunch of stuff, and if you haven't run it in a long time, it takes a while, and then you can start doing calculations, and you can plot functions like this, and they pop up. It's just very kind of old-fashioned, classical way to use Sage. You get little windows that pop up, and it works the same way everywhere. But there's also a notebook that you can run. So right when you start up, it says type notebook for the GUI. That is the graphical user interface to Sage. So if you type notebook, and I'm not going to do it because I already did on here, then what it does is it starts a little web server using stuff that's built into Sage, pops up your web browser pointed at that web server, and it is a web application like Gmail or Google Docs or something. It's actually very similar to Google Docs, which allows you to type in mathematics and then see the output. It's all evaluated using Sage. And there are two ways in which you might use it. This one, or at least two ways. One is that you install Sage yourself and then use it through the web browser. Two, you might never ever install Sage yourself, ever. Just like you've never installed the Gmail servers or you've never installed your own Google Docs. Probably nobody has unless they work at Google because it's closed source. But with Sage, you can install your own notebook server. You just install Sage, and then you type notebook. If you type notebook question mark, you'll see that there are a bunch of options which configure things like what port it should listen on, whether it should use SSL or not, whether it requires logins, whether you allow other users to create accounts, et cetera, et cetera. So there are a bunch of options for a notebook server if you want to set up one. So basically, there are three ways you might use Sage. One, you just download it and run it on your own computer. Two, you never ever download it. You just use sagenv.org. Typical thing you might do on a cell phone or something, or you know, if you're just in using some random computer and want to do a calculation with Sage. Three, you download it, and then you set up a server, and then you share it. Maybe you and your students all use that one server, or you use that for a class or something like that. So those are kind of three different ways you might use Sage. And I'm hoping there'll be a fourth way, which is you don't install it, and you use a server that generates a little bit of ad revenue that pays for the server. Maybe that'll exist in a couple of weeks. But it can scale well. OK, any other questions? All right, yes, please.
So suppose I find a bug in Sage, how do I report?
OK, that's a good question. So again, there are many ways to do that. Here's one way. If you're using the Sage notebook anywhere, you can click Report a Problem. This is especially good for shy people, because you don't have to, you can be totally anonymous. So if you're really shy and want a very low barrier to reporting a bug, you can fill in the version of Sage. That's the only thing that's required. And then, actually, a couple other things are required. But basically, you just fill out this little form. You don't have to provide your email or not, and you can submit it. And then hopefully, eventually, somebody actually will see it. It gets put into a Google Docs spreadsheet, and then occasionally somebody looks through that spreadsheet, finds the stuff that looks useful, and then reports that through official channels. So that's one way to report a bug. And it has the lowest barrier of entry at all. Every time you look anywhere at the Sage notebook, you'll find this report a problem button. It requires nothing on your part except that you have a web connection to submit the problem. Another thing you could do is go to sagemath.org. And let's see, there's a couple of things. So one is support mailing lists. And you could join the Sage support mailing list, which has like maybe 2,500 members, roughly. Actually, I don't know how many members it has, let's see. But it has lots and lots of members, and 2,135. And this is a typical place that people will report bugs. They'll just send a message to the list saying, I can't get Sage Notebook to bind a port, or I can't launch Sage on a Mac, or Sage Tech isn't working right, with captions. You know, so these are mostly bug reports, actually. And the nice thing about writing there is you'll get pretty quickly, you should get feedback, given that there are over 2,000 people on this list, about you know your problem. So you may get an answer through this. So that's another way to report a problem. If it's a serious problem, a Sage developer, somebody who's more familiar with changing Sage, will then put your bug in the track server, which is where we officially keep all of our bugs and feature requests. So this page will come up in a second. So that's another way. Then there's yet another way. There's no shortage of options. So another way to report bugs or ask questions is to go to ask, click on the thing that says Ask Sage. So this is a question answer site, kind of like Stack Overflow or Math Overflow. Does everybody here know about Math Overflow? If you don't, you should. This is almost exactly like Math Overflow, but for Sage. And there, basically, people have questions, little questions about Sage. They find bugs, whatever. They just type in their question, and since it gets sorted by questions without answers, and you'll see a lot of them have answers, not everyone, but a lot of them have answers, and people get karma for answering questions, so there's always a race to see who has the most karma, blah, blah, blah. You'll probably pretty quickly get some useful answers here. And so this, for certain personalities, we found that like some people really like the support list, and they don't like this sort of format at all. And then there are other people who are exact opposite. So, I mean, in particular, the people at the top of the list here who answer questions, like Mike Hansen really, really likes answering questions here, and he very rarely answers any questions on the mailing list. I've seen maybe three answers on the mailing list in the last month or two from him. But he's answering stuff on here all the time. And, you know, I like it, but I haven't been as good as I should have. And there are many, many hundreds of users of this, and there are 884 questions people have asked, and it hasn't been up that long. So that's another nice site. I mean, it really depends on your personality. And again, that's not the only way. There's also a live chat room you can go to. Let's see. Where is that? I think support IRC. So you just type in, say, your name here, do some funny CAPTCHA. Great. I can't even tell what that is. SL? Hopefully that was right. Yep, apparently it was right. And then it just logs you in a second. You'll be in this chat room. And see all the people listed on the right? These are all people logged into the chat room. Hi, this is William, giving a live talk on Sage. Anybody here? Help. So, and people will just, you know, they'll just pop into this chat room and start asking questions. And hopefully somebody's around and will notice and answer the question. So, you failed to identify in time for the nickname William. I've been changed to Guest 95. Okay, so that can happen. So hopefully somebody will pop up and say something. We can check that in a minute. So that's yet another way of getting help related to Sage. Okay, so there are lots and lots of different ways. IRC, and you notice there are a lot of people logged in here, and it's because certain people who like IRC constantly remind people that, yes, it would be nice if you would log into the IRC channel. So we have all these different options. Oh, yeah, here's the track server. This lists, let's see, I'll go to timeline. Basically, this lists tickets that are outstanding. So there are about 12,056 tickets. Some of them are bug reports. Some of them are feature requests. And I don't know, let's see. Complex numbers can segfault if given. So here's a typical ticket I've never looked at. Can segfault if given bad input to the init method. So somebody found, you know, a way to crash Sage. And somebody else, maybe David Rowe, who's just graduated from Harvard, working with Dick Gross on number theory stuff, reported the bug and attached a patch, which explains how to change Sage to fix the problem. And there's a discussion. You'll notice that the, somebody named Yaron Demeyer, the release manager, closed the ticket after somebody else reviewed it. So this guy, Robert Bradshaw, who was my PhD student until last year, now works full-time at Google. When he was probably supposed to be working at Google, during his 20% time, he reviewed this particular patch. So every single thing that goes into Sage goes through this process. It gets posted on the track server, somebody else reviews it, and then a third person, the release manager, closes the ticket. This is a nice, simple, clean patch with a simple discussion. Often this page can be very long, as there's a long discussion about what's right and wrong with the ticket and so on. Usually, the patch does not get through the review process without some modifications, just like your papers usually don't get accepted in a journal without some feedback. Okay, I better show you an actual example of using Sage, because I have some. Let me show you some of the graph theory. Oh, let me show you a little. Okay, here's using Mathematica from Sage. See if this works. This, since I don't have Mathematica license installed on my computer, this should SSH to a computer at UW. Let's see. I don't know. Maybe that isn't allowed because of how I'm authenticated on the network or something. Maybe SSH isn't allowed. So I'm going to just cancel that. By the way, it was running, and in order to stop it, I put the cursor in the box and hit the escape key. That just interrupts the calculation. But what would happen is you can create an object and then call Mathematica methods on it and do arithmetic and so on. Here's a little linear algebra example. So here's an image of the auditorium that we're in right now, right there. And you can put this little thing at interact above a function. It'll analyze all the inputs to the function and make widgets that allow you to control the function that way. And you get dynamically the thing updates. It's kind of like Mathematica's manipulate command, but it's going through a web browser, so it's a little less snappy than Mathematica, but otherwise it's very similar, very very similar. Because when we implement it, we just looked at all the controls Mathematica's manipulate had, and emulated them, and then added some more later. So you can see it's showing image compression. I'll skip the number theory examples because what do you guys care about number three? But here's graph theory. So there's a whole bunch of graphs in Sage. So these are all families of graphs. And I had this student, Emily Kirkman. She did a project where she just found kind of every family of graphs she could think of and then put them into Sage so that you could easily construct them. So you know, if you're interested in ClawGraph, you can do that. Hit the tab key. By the way, I don't have to type the whole thing out. I can just type the first few letters and hit tab. There's really good tab completion. And you hit open parentheses and hit tab, and it shows you documentation and examples. So it tells you about it. Apparently, there's just one claw graph, whatever that is, et cetera. Here's an example of another graph, the buckyball, which we've plotted using g.plot. Here's another example of a random lobster graph, which again is plotted. And you can do neat things with these. So let's do this in real time. You can compute the automorphism groups of graphs, which is, you know, it's going to give a different answer because it's a random graph each time. But that's actually, that one function was an enormous amount of work by Robert Miller to completely implement capability of efficiently computing, reasonably efficiently given the problem, the automorphism group of a graph. You can also tell whether two graphs are isomorphic. It implements the knotty algorithm of Brendan Mackay. It's the only open source implementation of that. Or the only open source GPL compatible implementation. Brendan Mackay has an implementation, but which is open source, but it has restrictions on who's allowed to use it. For example, if you're involved in the military in any way, you're not allowed to use it. Whereas we allow military, we allow soldiers to use this function. You can chromatic numbers.
So you have to rewrite the whole darn thing.
Yep, but I think the rewrite is better in some ways. That was probably a bad idea. What did I just do?
So the rewrite, instead of being named naughty, the rewrite is named nice.
Yeah. So let's see. Yeah, I already showed you that. So, and the rewrite, it ended up being the case that when he was rewriting it, he understood the algorithm, and he ended up modifying it and improving the implementation of the algorithm in certain ways for other problems involving, I think, automorphism groups of codes and stuff like that. And he did a bunch of other partition refinement stuff. I don't even know what that means, but you guys do, because you're combinatorics people. Here's an example of algebraic combinatorics, symmetric functions. Creating them and doing arithmetic with, well, I didn't really do any arithmetic, but maybe I could. Let's see. I guess you multiply symmetric functions. Yeah. So it shows them in terms of different bases. So these are very symmetric function algebras. And arithmetic with them is supposed to be very fast. Since probably a good way to finish is, here's the combinatorics section of the SAGE reference manual, which to show you that it's big. I'm zooming out. So it still doesn't show you the whole thing. There's a lot of combinatorics functionality included in SAGE. And then maybe I should zoom in a little so you can actually see it. I don't really know that much about it, but there are many, many people. There's a group called SAGE Combinat, which has a bunch of people, for example, in France and around the world, who have been implementing at some rapid rate functionality for combinatorics in SAGE since 2007. It started with one guy in undergrad, Mike Hansen, and then about a year or two later, I guess 2 years later, he got the rest of the group into porting all of their work from MuPAD to SAGE. And then about a month after they did that, MuPAD was bought out by MATLAB. And suddenly the price of MuPAD went up dramatically. So they've been re-implementing everything in SAGE. So there's a lot of combinatorial functionality in SAGE. And I think that's probably a good place for me to stop. So you can see there's many, many functions related to combinatorics. Good. Any quick additional questions? Okay, all right, thanks.